Since the passing of a sweeping voting bill in 2013, North Carolina's electoral process has been in a state of constant flux. A panel of federal court judges wrote the latest chapter of the state's electoral saga last Friday when it decided unanimously that the law, which in part required a form of government identification to vote, was discriminatory and repealed it. The court's decision was also controversial, but at least one local election official says confusion and frustration among voters and officials is bipartisan. Chris Thomas has more.
It's easy to miss Greene County, North Carolina. Its estimated population is just over 21,000. At a relatively slight 266 square miles, it's the ninth smallest county in North Carolina.
You know, with us being a rural county, we have a lot of population that is focused on agriculture.
That's Stephen Hines, director of the Greene County Board of Elections. He's held that position for a year, and he's from neighboring Lenoir County.
We do have some folks who used to work over at industries in Kinston, DuPont, that sort of thing. Our population, registered voters-wise, I can tell you, is around 11,000. So we're a relatively small county, but we do have somewhat of a diverse population.
Over the past 3 years, there's been tremendous changes in voter ID requirements, early voting schedules, congressional district maps, and primary elections. Mr. Hines said the cost has been nominal on the local level, but time spent training and retraining Election Day assistants has increased significantly this year.
We've already met with them one time, and we're scheduled to meet two more times with them before the general election.
And is that abnormal, or is that about what folks would expect?
That is abnormal. Normally we would only have the two-hour class prior to the general election.
That's not to mention the frustration he's fielded from voters in the county.
Regardless of the lawmakers who make the laws and the judges who interpret the laws and may change things, they're not the ones who are actually there at the polling place facing the voter when that voter shows up. It's the poll worker. And that poll worker is going to see a lot of frustration anytime there's a change. It doesn't matter if it's showing an ID or not showing an ID. If it's a change, it's going to be some frustration from the voters.
Mr. Hines summed up the last 3 years in two words:
ever-changing.
And as it stands now, much of that training might be for naught. Last Friday, July 29th, a three-judge panel for the 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals scrapped North Carolina's entire voting law overhaul, bringing everything back to where it was on August 11th, 2013, the day before it was signed into law by Governor Pat McCrory. East Carolina University political science professor Carmine Scarvo explains the law in its original form was much more constricting.
Soon after that, in response to the threat of lawsuits, the legislature changed the ruling somewhat and said, well, if you can't produce a photo ID, you could produce one of a series of other kinds of documents to prove that you really were you.
But that did not sway the court's panel. The unanimous decision, written by longtime Fourth Circuit Judge Diana Motz, was scathing, bringing the state to task on its history of race-based discrimination at the polls, including a perceived effort to do the same with its most recent voting law. Dr. Scarvo said voting laws have to pass two tests, for intent and effect. The prior is the more stringent, and the state did not pass.
The court found that the North Carolina law intended to reduce minority voting strength, not simply that it had the effect of doing it, that the legislature in passing the law intended to discriminate against minorities.
But that's not how LaShonda Humphrey, a black woman from New Bern, saw things. I asked her how she felt when she heard the voter ID law had been struck because it was deemed discriminatory by federal judges.
Kind of shocked. I don't see how it was, but if that's what they said.
Ms. Humphrey said she's been an active voter for the past two election cycles and was ready to show her ID at the polls come November. She said her top priority in public life is equality, and as far as she could see, the voter ID requirement did just that.
The voter ID law, it didn't affect me. Like, it didn't bother me, because even in a quote-unquote rural area that we live in, you have to have an ID at some point. I don't see what the problem was showing it if it was required, as long as everybody had to show it. As long as everybody done it, it should be no problem.
Fairness is also important to Jackie Charwood of Jacksonville, also a registered voter. Ms. Charwood's belief in the democratic process is why she thinks the Fourth Circuit Court's decision was a mistake.
I don't know exactly how you're supposed to get through life without some sort of ID. You know, I mean, even to file for government assistance, you have to have an ID of some sort. So, you know, I don't think that it's a bad idea to need to have an ID to vote.
The court echoed the law's opponents when it said it disproportionately affected large portions of the population, including people who are poor. But Charwood holds on to her opinion, even after experiencing poverty herself.
I was a single parent with two children. I was on assistance, government assistance. My parents paid for my apartment, and I had a broken down, almost didn't make it from A to B car. So I definitely understand. But I still, you know, I still think it's extremely important to be able to, you know, to show who you are and where you come from and make sure that your voice is heard.
Her biggest concern lays in the fairness of the election process. She worries the stakes are so high and upcoming races are so close that the desire to get an edge by any means may prove irresistible without stronger proofs against voter fraud.
I don't want to say that people are dishonest, but people are dishonest. if they think that they can get a one-up, a lot of people will.
But times have changed, Dr. Scarvo said, and ballot stuffing at the level seen in previous generations is almost impossible, even with same-day voter registration and without proof of ID at the polls. Voting, he says, is just different.
Selling pseudoephrine or something across the counter, you know, there's no idea that the pharmacist is going to discriminate against African Americans or discriminate against young people or discriminate against poor people or anything else. But we know that this history is there in voting because it's, you know, it happened for hundreds of years.
Furthermore, he says these laws do disproportionately impact major portions of eastern North Carolina's electorate. The region is still, primarily, rural, and getting out to the DMV can be especially difficult if it holds strange hours. The state has 24 satellite offices for driver's licenses. They're in some of the state's smallest and poorest counties, including Washington, Currituck, Perquimans, Pamlico, Jones, Hyde, and Greene counties. These offices are only open 10 days out of the year.
The voter ID law has probably a bigger impact on eastern North Carolina than it does on the rest of the state because the four demographic groups that are most widely affected by this are minorities, rural people, students, and poor people. And, you know, minorities, rural people, and poor people, there's a lot of overlap in those categories.
The law's ultimate fate is unknown. Its advocates have vowed to take up the fight to the Supreme Court if necessary. Meanwhile, Stephen Hines knows he and his voters are still in limbo. The future, for the most part, is out of their hands. If you want to read excerpts from the Fourth Circuit Court's decision, go to our website, publicradioeast.org. You'll also find a link to the full text and more on what you need to know before you go to the polls in November. I'm Chris Thomas.